Final hour. Darren Donick and Chase here on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. If you want to win a pair of tickets to see Stanford and Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt Stadium in a couple of weeks, that'll be Saturday, September 18th, head over to YouTube and subscribe to our 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter to win a way into that game. One winner will be chosen by next Monday, September 13th. Let's welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. He is on the line with us. Coach, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for doing this. We've talked to you since you've taken on this job and even leading up to this game. You knew the challenges. You knew the landscape. Are the challenges everything you thought it was going to be, Clark, or is it maybe even a little bit steeper climb than you initially anticipated?
Yeah, I don't know that I would say a steeper climb. I mean, I think the challenges of you know, redirecting and rebuilding and growing anew is always going to, you know, they're always going to be significant. I think, you know, we sometimes want to convince ourselves that, you know, we're further along than we are, or, you know, that it's going to be easier than we maybe initially thought. But I mean, the truth is, this is what we signed up for. And you know, Saturday was disappointing for everybody involved, but yet, you know, to me, it's an important moment for us as a program to redirect from. And, you know, the sooner we, you know, get over the sting of it, the sooner we get over the, you know, the ego protection involved and just, the self-pity, it's like this is our moment, and we gotta take it. We gotta learn from it. We gotta understand that it represents where we are, but not where we're headed. And we gotta put the experience to use this week to prepare for a game against, you know, Colorado State on the road. That's gonna be tough.
Yeah, coaches, as you know, have said that you learn the most about your team in between weeks 1 and 2. So with that being said, what are you hoping to learn going into week 2? About your team?
Well, I want to see, obviously I want to see improvement. I mean, we have to, you know, we have to start the game against Colorado State prepared to pounce, to take the fight to the opponent. And it wasn't a lack of effort on Saturday in my mind as I watched from the sideline, but there was a lack of intensity in our execution. And particularly, I mean, look, to win games at this level, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. It's going to require the facing down of adversity. And, you know, I feel like growth in this program, in our practices, in our preparation, you see a level of compete, you see a level of spirit and enthusiasm that we've been able to sustain. And early in fall camp, like we had a couple of days where, you know, I felt like it looked like survival mode. I mean, literally, we're learning to do everything at a high level to facilitate the results we want. But, you know, I did not feel like in the middle of the game on Saturday, as adversity set in, once East Tennessee State scored a touchdown, I didn't feel like that we were ready to counterpunch. It was almost like the scoreboard, you know, just took a little bit of that enthusiasm, that energy from us, and we have to get over that. I mean, you know, let go of everything that we've learned about the competitive moment and start to actualize our potential in those moments and connect with each other on the sideline to will the result that we want in the end. And so that's a lot. You know,
yeah.
Week 1 to week 2, we are learning how to compete and win. We're learning the detail it takes. You know, like I said, I felt like the effort was there. I didn't feel like there was anyone that, you know, gave up or gave in. And yet that's not how we, you know, mark our standards. You know, that's just the expectation. This is about how we move our program forward, and we can do that by just taking a higher level of compete to the game on Saturday and really having fun with that competitive moment. I mean, you learn about yourself when you face that adversity. You learn about your teammates. Let's enjoy that process rather than, you know, kind of like, you know, be swallowed up by it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this conversation. So I felt like, you know, I coach a youth baseball team, and I felt like last year at 9 years old, in Kid Pitch, going from Coach Pitch, where I was their friend, pitching to them, going to Kid Pitch, where strangers were pitching to them. It was a big psychological game, and we had a lot of the same conversations. That's why I was fascinated with what you were saying. And I told my assistants, I was like, I feel like we should put like a white coat on, because I feel like we're doing more psychological work than we are coaching and teaching the game of baseball. But we're through all that. We're now on the other side and going into 10U. So with that being said, I'm talking about kids, you know, 9 and 10 years old. How do you do that at the college level?
Well, listen, we're still talking about kids, and I mean, it's young people. And the other thing to understand about football is, you know, the jump from high school to college, it's a leap. And there's so many variables that come into play, and most of our players have in one way or another been just superstars at the high school level, and many have worked really hard for that kind of competitive separation, and yet you drop into an environment where you're right at the mean line, and you have to work to separate yourself every single day. There's a lot, I think, just in the baseline experience of movement from high school to college, there's a lot that has to be learned, and there's a lot that has to be unlearned. I think what further complicates that is just, the situation we've dropped into here that, you know, requires further untangling just of past experience. And there is a psychological weight to that. But listen, guys, we have to get over that. I mean, I'm not here to talk about that as what's going to continue to plague us. My message to the team is Vanderbilt football will not be defined, ceases to be defined by self-pity. I mean, this is about how we look each other in the eye, look at ourselves in the mirror, and understand that we controlled what happened on Saturday. It was not something that happened to us. You know, I think we at times felt like, East Tennessee State was going to be a cooperative opponent, and that's never going to be the case. And part of learning to win is understanding how hard it is, how on point you have to be, and how, again, inevitably, there's going to be adversity. It's never going to be easy. And so we prepare for those moments where we have to counterpunch, where we have to find out about ourselves, where someone has to step up and make a play. And we don't do it by pressing. We do it by defaulting to process and doing the little things at a really high level. And not to, go too long into this, but, ultimately for us, our team was not met with a message, nor did I internalize a message that said, how could this happen? Or, why did this happen? This happened for the exact reason it needed to happen. You know, we have to learn through this. We have to grow from it. And we have to become the team that we can become. And I don't think that it's going to be able to happen here until we have stripped everything down to the studs and are willing to build it anew at every turn. And, I think in the part of this process, we're at the point now where, it's going from, being like understanding and being responsive and showing up and working hard to like a deep level of belief, a deep level of awareness that we carry with us from the heart into our performance. And so that was the message of yesterday. And now today we shift focus to Colorado State and we go at it really hard in our Tuesday practice. And it's, I think the guys are excited to do that.
Talking to Clark Lee, head football coach at Vanderbilt. And so, Coach, let's get a couple of specific areas here for you to address. It looked to me like, regardless of which quarterback was in, there were just a number of plays in the passing game, especially, where it just didn't have time to develop. So offensive line, pass protection, it looked like you had a lot of breakdowns there. Where do you start in trying to get that to the next level?
Well, I think it starts in practice. And, for us, this has been an issue that we've kind of faced down in our competition against our defense. And so we have to be more demanding of protection. We have to, as players, take ownership over the communication and the techniques that allow for, a firm pocket to be set. There were a few instances, and some of them, the free hit on Mike Wright, where we're at the 29-yard line heading in, and we got a double move call, the ball's going to go up in the end zone. Those are the kind of shots that we want to throw to Will Shepard and Chris Pierce and to get, our size of receiver going. For us to cut a single edge blitzer loose is negligence, and we have to take ownership over that and be better. You know, that's communication lines, that's execution points. It's all doable. It's just a matter of taking the awareness. Unfortunately, now we've had to learn this through a negative result. We take the awareness that we have and we apply it to preparing with more intensity and more intentionality to ensure that we're better in those moments. But be it twist games, be it blitzes, you know, we have to be stout and create a firm pocket so that Ken and Mike can have confidence back there to deliver the ball where they need to deliver it.
You were talking about Will Shepard, and he jumped out at me as a guy that he got targeted a lot, and here's a guy that is playing at a position group where you have some other guys who have done some things and been around for a while, and Cam Johnson and Chris Pierce. So tell me where Shepard has really made a jump. He looked like he's got some good tools there.
You know, Shep, he had a spring where he kind of jumped out at us and then sustained that through summer and fall. I think he's really come a long way. When I look at Will, I think about not just where he is, but where he's going to be. I think he's got just a really high ceiling. He's long, tall. He can run. You know, he's going to have an opportunity to be, you know, to be a guy that's going to have the ball in his hands, and we hope that can make big plays for us. And in review of the game Saturday, there were times where he showed up and was able to create some pressure. I know there's some tackles that he wants to break. It's like there was a couple times where he's just one step away from springing a long one, a breakout for a touchdown, which we need. We need some explosive movement on offense. But yet there's also some nuanced technique where, you know, he can be more effective on the deep ball. You know, he can be more effective on the post that we missed early in the game. You know, those are things that I think through his experience, his growth, his understanding of the game, you're going to see a playmaker develop and someone that I'm excited to watch grow. We need him to grow up fast because obviously, you know, that level of explosiveness will help us out a lot on our offense.
You said, Clark, that you wanted to use both quarterbacks. You did. You know, Mike Wright came in, gave you a spark. As you mentioned, he had a couple of good drives going that sort of got short-circuited there with a penalty or a sack. But given what we were talking about, the breakdowns protection-wise, do you look at that position and say kind of the same formula going into Saturday? You're going to see both guys and maybe ride the hot hand depending on the situation?
Yeah, I want it to be – this is Kenny's job right now. He's earned that. He's the starting quarterback. Mike is, a counterpunch. He's someone that we trust, and he has a skill set that we think can be very challenging on defenses. I almost, you know, want to even make a little more distinction in how we design around both guys so that we can further bring out their strengths, and that's something that we've talked about as an offensive staff here. But but no, Ken will be the starter. We certainly, you know, as the week goes, we plan on using Mike as well. Felt like he, when he came in, he did provide a little spark. But I think we can go further and again, bringing out his strengths and allowing him to impact the game, impact winning for us. He's a talented guy that has earned the right to be out there.
We're talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, here on Darren Donick and Chase. And I know you mentioned this in your press conference earlier today about offensive play calling, but could you kind of take us through the setup there with having, you know, David as the OC, you have Joey Lynch as the pass game coordinator, Norvell as the run game coordinator, just kind of the breakdown of how your offensive coaches are set up and trying to deliver the message to the players as quickly as possible within a game?
Yeah, the communication lines are really they're streamlined. I mean, it's Joey's game to call. We are collaborative in our approach to develop a game plan. David Rye has his personality, his fingerprints involved in that. He and Joey have worked close together from the very beginning. I think in fall camp, it just became clear that Joey's experience gave us a little better, execution point in our scrimmages. As play caller, and then also, you know, by taking that aspect of it off David's plate, he's focused more attention to that receiver group that we need, again, to grow up fast to become a feature in our offense. But as far as the in-game you know, they obviously, like any offensive staff, communicate with each other, plan the next series, talk about what's working, what's not. But when it comes down to, like, calling the play, you know, we've given that responsibility to Joey, and that has to do with his experience and all that he brings to the table in that respect. So that's how it works.
Gotcha. As we talk about this a lot, you know, with hockey, and obviously it's different with road trips and you're on the road longer, but you all heading out to Colorado State, you know, how much are you looking forward to having that opportunity to be away from everything that's here, everything that's at home, where you can just be there as a team and bond, because it's still a new team, a new coaching staff, all of those things. So how important will that aspect of the road trip be?
It's a great aspect of it. I mean, we have to be road warriors. You have to bind together and find a way to win a game in a challenging environment. There's, like you mentioned, additional time where you're in transition, on the plane, in the hotel, spending time together. We have a long day Saturday because we play at night. So, additional time in preparation and to be with each other. Like you said, it's a new team, new coaching staff. We're all getting to know each other. My goal is that, you know, the adversity this team faces, whether in game or obviously coming out of Saturday after a disappointing result, that adversity, you know, strengthens our bonds, that we actually tighten as a program as a result of that. And so, going on the road together is certainly a chance to kind of double down on that and to spend a little extra time together.
As we close this, I just want to get your opinion as a head coach. You've been a defensive coordinator as well. Clearly, we're talking a lot about the targeting penalty in college football, and I understand the intent behind it. I think everybody understands the intent behind it. It's all about player safety, but it is also a controversial penalty. It's an inconsistent penalty. So looking at it from your coaching eyes, you know, is this something, in your opinion, that you think that they need to look at, the officials need to look at, to try and make it where it's safe for the players, but also as fair of a penalty as it possibly can be?
Yeah, I think the word that you said that I best describes what I feel about is just the consistency in it. I do feel like the concentration on the targeting foul has allowed us to teach and coach a certain way that does make the game safer. So I think the intention is there. It's challenging at times as a defensive player to know how to win at the point of attack. And sometimes, you know, it's obviously you see some of those that are kind of malicious or maybe have a little more purposeful in the way they're blows are delivered, but there are also some that are just competitive moments, and just allowing there to be some consistency in it so that we can coach it and teach it and the players can understand it, and that way we're not in critical situations without players that have earned the right to be in the game. And that would be my hope, and fortunately I haven't experienced it much on my end. You know, we've had a couple over the years, but nothing too crazy. But I know it obviously was a wild week in that respect, and it's the topic of conversation today, certainly.
Well, Clark, I appreciate the time as always. Best of luck at Colorado State. We'll be watching, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks, guys. Y'all have a great day. We'll talk later.
Awesome. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, joining us here on the show as they do take on Colorado State coming up late Saturday night. And you can listen to those games on our sister station, 93.3 Classic Hits. As we go to the break, Mitch Light from The Athletic is going to join us next. Darren, tell us about DraftKings.
I will. First Sunday of the NFL season is here, and the excitement continues with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. DraftKings is giving all new customers a can't-miss offer to celebrate the return of the NFL season. All you have to do is bet $1 on any football game this weekend and receive $200 in free bets instantly. No matter what. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they just bet at least $1 on any football game. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. All you have to do is download that DraftKings Sportsbook app right now, use that promo code 1025GAME, and receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any Week 1 game. That promo code, again, to use, 1025GAME, and get your free $200 in bets instantly. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Special thanks to Clark Lee for joining us in that last segment. Vanderbilt football coach back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon here in our market. And of course, our show is presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. We now don't switch gears. We're going to keep talking college football, but we bring in Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
Darren, I'm doing well. Hope you guys are okay.
Yeah, and I want to start with last night's game. Ole Miss cruises to a victory over Louisville without Lane Kiffin on the sidelines.
Hotty toddy.
And we had an interesting conversation with Nick Suss yesterday, who covers the team for the Clarion Ledger. And I asked him about the defense. And, you know, last year they were basically last or right at the very end with every team in every defensive category, right? Like, they're one of the worst defenses in the country last year. Nobody's saying can they go from last to first. But what if they're like in the middle of the pack, if they're in the 70s in defensive categories this season, rather than a team most would project to be 6-6, if their defense has massively improved, are they a team now that can win 8 or 9 games with a better defense?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, you're right. They were horrendous defensively. And one thing about Ole Miss is, a team that plays so many snaps, it can be dangerous to look up their total defense. You got to look at yards per play because they're on the field for so many more time. They're on the field for so many more plays, and but they weren't good in any category last year. And it's hard to say. You don't want to overreact. I know Louisville's not a great team, and they don't really threaten you down the field. And they've lost some skill players, but I don't care if you know, and there were some garbage points and garbage yards there, but they looked really good in the first 2.5-3 quarters. That offense is really, really talented. If you can, there's just so many ways they can beat you. If you guys are watching, you could feel like Kirk Herbstreit's pain because he wanted to diagnose and tell us why Ole Miss was so good offensively and what they were doing, but they couldn't figure out how to get replays in because the Ole Miss plays at such a frenetic pace. I thought that was kind of funny there. So, yeah, I mean, the schedule is very difficult. We know life in the SEC West is difficult, but, you know, look what they did to Alabama last year. They're, you know, one of the few teams to move the ball consistently. So I think Matt Corral is fantastic. I followed their, you know, they've recruited very well at the running back position. They've got guys different sizes. They can do different things. So, Darren, I think Ole Miss is one of the more intriguing teams, not just in the league, but in the country.
Well, you're right about Kirk Herbstreit. He was definitely frustrated last night.
He kept referencing it over and over again. Yeah. Sorry, Darren. I think they made an adjustment at halftime as a crew, is like with the producer. And basically, they just said, we're going to go right to a replay immediately, and then you pick it up. You don't need to say, let's look at that again. Because I did notice, not like I was charting it, but I did notice they did show more replays in the third quarter than they did in the first half.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. Not a good weekend of first week of college football for the ACC. What, too early to tell, but what'd you make of the showing of the ACC or lack of for the first week of college football?
Yeah, I mean, not great. I mean, Clemson, there's no shame in losing to Georgia, of course, but you don't want your marquee team to lose. You know, they had two marquee teams, Clemson and North Carolina. And while North Carolina lost to another ACC team, so you can argue it's not bad for the league, when you have a top 10 team, you probably, you know, if you're the commissioner, if you're Jim Phillips, you probably want North Carolina to win that game. Now, I think it's good for college football that Virginia Tech wins a big game like that. It was a fun game to watch. Florida State looks maybe a little bit, they're definitely improved. They look better than maybe expected. You know, NC State with a nice win against probably a bad South Florida team, but very resounding. But then, you know, Georgia Tech loses at home to Northern Illinois. And this is not the Northern Illinois team of 5-10 years ago. They they were one of the worst teams in the MAC in recent years. So that was a bad loss. Duke losing to Charlotte is a bad loss. You know, Louisville obviously didn't look great there. Miami, you know, I'm not gonna ding Miami for losing that bad to Alabama, but yeah, they're not a great weekend for the ACC.
Yep, no doubt about it. What stood out to you in the SEC? Take that wherever you want, but what stood out to you? What got your attention? Is it the LSU loss to UCLA? Is it the Vanderbilt loss to ETSU? I mean, you take it however you want. It could be a good thing too. I don't know.
Yeah, not too much was that, you know, obviously Vanderbilt losing was not a good sign for Vanderbilt, but doesn't really affect the league because Vanderbilt, you know, was not expected to be, you know, relevant in the league this year. I think LSU losing is not a great, It's not great for the person that's not great for the most is Ed Orgeron, obviously. But if LSU goes on and threatens Alabama and Texas A&M, it's probably, you know, that people nationally will hold that against the SEC, just sort of like a few years ago when a mediocre Auburn team, well, not mediocre, but not a vintage Auburn team went out and beat Oregon early in the year. That people held that against Oregon. So conversely, you know, ideally for the SEC, it's probably great if LSU doesn't have a great year, you know, if they're third or fourth in the league by that. You know, we're all overreacting to one game. Arkansas fumbled around against Rice a little bit, but really, you know, played well in the fourth quarter and covered the spread by, I think, 1 point. Mississippi State with an impressive rally. I watched a decent amount of that game, and then they were left. I left them for dead, and then I saw on Twitter they were coming back, so I watched the end of that game. That was almost like a college basketball game with momentum swings in there. South Carolina, obviously, you know, Eastern Illinois is not a good team, but, you know, in Shane Beamer's debut, they took care of business with, you know, Zeb Noland, a sixth-year senior coach at quarterback. So, you know, I think we've got Kentucky, Missouri's huge, obviously, this week. But not a ton, you know, last week to really caught my attention. I guess Florida maybe, potential quarterback situation there. Anthony Richardson, the backup, I didn't see partly in that game. You know, was really good there, and Dan Mullen's trying to defuse the situation. So that's something to watch going forward.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. So, Mitch, as we look ahead, let's look at two teams that people probably don't watch play a whole lot around here, but that's the next opponent for Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Give us a couple of things that we need to know. Let's start with Pittsburgh.
Very good defensively, and you know, I'm not just saying that because, oh, it's Pat Narduzzi, he's a defensive coach, and, you know, watch out for them. They led the nation last year in a stat called havoc rate, which is basically interceptions, tackles for losses, sacks, forced fumbles. Basically, anytime you do something defensively that, like, wreaks havoc on the offense. 22.4% of their defensive snaps were a havoc play, which is outstanding if you think about it, almost one quarter. And then part of that is tackles for loss, like I said. They led the nation in tackles for loss, 111. So a very aggressive defense. You know, they went 5-5 last year in the ACC, lost two games by 1 point, one at BC in overtime, one at Miami. So it's a solid team. You know, this is it's sort of like a program game for Tennessee. You find out where the program is. And, you know, this year, in year one of Josh Heupel, I'd say there's no shame in losing to Pitt at home. But big picture, this is a game Tennessee as a program shouldn't lose. You know, I'm kind of contradicting myself there. So I think it's a nice barometer game. It'd be a nice statement if they won. Kenny Pickett, their quarterback, is good, not great. He's one of those guys that burst onto the scene as a true freshman. I think he had a big game against Miami 4 years ago, and he's been okay, but, you know, he's just one of those guys who seems like he's been around forever, hasn't really gotten that much better. So I think the spread was, what, 2 when it came out. Pitt may be favored. Interesting barometer game for both programs. Hey, Pitt can go on the road and win in a hostile SEC environment. We just talked about the ACC not looking great. That would be a nice win for that league.
So with that in mind, let's now look at Vanderbilt's opponent in Colorado State. What's the matchup looking like there, knowing that Vanderbilt's got nowhere to go but up?
Yeah, well, neither does Colorado State. They lost in week one to South Dakota State, which is, you know, historically a very good FCS program, but they got beaten pretty badly. Very curious hire, you know, Steve Adazio, was 2 years ago, wasn't bad at Boston College. I think they might have gone like 7-6 4 or 5 years in a row, but it wasn't necessarily a hot commodity. You think of Adazio, he's at Florida, Temple, I think he's a Syracuse alum maybe. East Coast guy goes out there, 1-3 last year in a shortened season, so hard to draw many conclusions from that. But we have some guys on our staff here who have access to a lot of historical records and, basically results going back for decades. And I asked, is this the first time that two FBS teams, which lost to FCS teams in week one, are playing each other in week two? And my response was, ha, that would be a real pain to look up. Translation, I'm not looking that up. What was the response I got there? So, on paper, before the season, this was a game you probably said Vanderbilt has a really good chance of winning. You watched Vanderbilt the other day, you're probably not feeling that way. If you're a Colorado State fan, you're probably thinking the same thing. It's like, hey, my team lost at home to South Dakota State. I'm not too confident. Someone's going to win the game. And, I'm sure you guys just talked to Clark Lee. I'm, just like you guys, interested to see what the response is in week two after such a poor performance in week one.
I don't know how much you got the chance to see it. I know you were watching a number of different games. But, Mitch, I'm just curious. I think you knew that the talent issue in terms of game breakers on both sides of the ball, that was going to be something that they're going to have to deal with. They don't have enough of those guys. They're not going to until they can recruit some more guys or find a few transfers, et cetera. But the execution, the scheme, that was what was just jumped out at to me. And the level of lack of physical being able to just overwhelm ETSU, just alarming.
Yeah, well, especially since 2 years ago in the Vanderbilt team that really struggled. And I know ETSU is probably a lot better. They had a good spring season. They're better than they were 2 years ago. But Vanderbilt overwhelmed ETSU at the line of scrimmage 2 years ago. And, I think they might have had 110 total yards of offense. So it was a far cry from that. So, yeah, I think that was one of many concerns there, the physicality at the line of scrimmage. And you, like you said, Willie, this Vanderbilt team doesn't have a lot of game breakers. They've got some quality receivers who can catch the ball, but no one really to make that big play. In theory, you'd like to think that, okay, you don't have any game breakers at the SEC level, but they should be able to do it against an opponent like ETSU, but that wasn't the case there. So when you don't make big plays, you got to drive the ball down the field. And if you want to drive the ball down the field, you got to control the line of scrimmage. And Vanderbilt didn't do that either. So that was a recipe for, not scoring a lot of points and then mistakes. Had a lot of holding penalties, which is a result of, getting beaten at the line of scrimmage. And then Tyler Steen, illegal man downfield on a touchdown. If you score that, maybe the game's a little bit different there. Just lack of execution / physicality at the line and then too many penalties, obviously. Spelled trouble for Vanderbilt.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic here on Darren Donick and Chase. And, as you talked about the ACC and their struggles, one of those teams was Duke losing to Charlotte. And we got to know Will Healy quite a bit when he was here at Austin Peay. And I've watched what he did at Austin Peay, what he's now done at Charlotte. Is that a name that people need to pay attention to? Is it's probably going to be out there for some bigger jobs this year, most likely?
Sure. He was obviously, I think, Vanderbilt. I don't know how serious it got, but was a guy that he looked at. I made the comment, I don't know if I tweeted out to a friend or texted someone, I said, Will Healy could be coaching Duke next year. We all think that David Cutcliffe's obviously had a great career, but there was rumors he might retire this year. Clearly a guy who knows how to build a program and build a culture. After I said, I don't know how great of a fit he is at Duke, he takes a lot of transfers. Not that you can't take transfers at Duke or an quote-unquote academic school, but you're not going to take as many there. I don't think his... I've got no problem with style. I don't think his style is a fit everywhere. The rah-rah type thing, some of the more established programs might kind of look down on that. But there's no doubt the guy knows how to coach. And here's a thing. He obviously did a great job rebuilding Austin Peay. You know what his record was in year one at Austin Peay?
Did not win a game.
Nope.
0-11. Yeah. So it tells you, there's very few very quick fixes in college football. And, that's why the thing about Will Healy is when people were floating him out there for Vanderbilt or other jobs, some people would look at his overall record. I was like, well, you can't look at his overall record. That Austin Peay program, when he took over, was, horrible. And Vanderbilt played them twice when I was doing sideline duty, and, you know, I get down there, and you can really see the quality of players, and Vanderbilt beat them badly twice, and I was shocked about, quite frankly, how bad those Austin Peay teams were. So Will Healy takes over a bad team, goes 0-11. When you haven't been a head coach for very long, it's hard to get on the right side of 500 when you start 0-11 there. So that's just kind of a big picture thing. When you're looking at coaching resumes, sometimes the overall record, you know, it might be hard to sell to a fan base. Oh, we hired a coach who's 500. Well, you got to dive in and really see what he did and where he started.
Oregon won. They're 1-0, but they had a tough time with Fresno. Fresno put up a fight. Now they go to the Shoe to take on Ohio State. Ohio State coming in as a 14.5-point favorite. What do you think of the Ducks right now as they go into Columbus to take on the Buckeyes?
Well, like about 99.7% of the world, I don't get the Pac-12 network. So I did not. I kept trying to flip over to that game when it was tight, and I couldn't find it. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's on the Pac-12.
You mean with your high-tech abilities, Mitch, and your status at The Athletic, you can't find a way to get that done?
I'm just a common man, Willie, and who has DirecTV here.
Okay.
So just I get whatever I can.
Talk to your people. Talk to your superiors. Talk to Rex Road. Can Rex Road help you out with this? He knows people.
Rex Road and technology, sure. I'm sure those two go together. This Oregon team, obviously, the big news there was Kayvon Thibodeau, their All-American defensive end. It looks like he got hurt. Looks like he's going to play. Anthony Brown, the quarterback, is a sixth-year senior, started parts of three seasons at Boston College, a good player. I don't know if he's a national championship-level quarterback or a playoff-caliber quarterback. You know, I'm sure we all watch the Ohio State-Minnesota game. I just talked about making big plays and having explosive athletes. There's a team that has explosive athletes. I mean, that wide receiving core is absurd. Just look how good they are. They're number one. Alabama's number one wide receiver, or potential number one wide receiver, is a Ohio State castoff. So they can score in bunches. I'll be itching to see if Oregon can do anything defensively to kind of confuse C.J. Stroud. It's only his second career game. Thibodeau's healthy, and they can put some pressure on him and force him to make some mistakes. You know, he's not quite the runner that Justin Fields was. They'd like to keep him back more in the pocket there. So I think that's the recipe for Oregon. But Ohio State, too many weapons. The 14.5 seems, I don't know if it seems high. I don't know if I'd pick Ohio State to cover, but I like the Buckeyes to win.
Going to be an interesting week two of college football after a fun week one. Mitch, appreciate the time as always. We will do it again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us every Tuesday. Light after Lee, I guess, is what we're calling it.
The Light After Lee.
I like that. That's
okay.
Good.
That's shedding light on the situation.
Yep. Wow. Dad joke. We will come back, wrap up today's show. But first, Willie, you're going to tell us about loans once again.
Hey, you know, if you're living in our listening area, you know that your home value is way up. That's one of the benefits of living in our city. Home values are great right now. And so one of the options you have right now that Loan Pronto wants you to know about is that with mortgage rates at all-time lows, it's a great time to call Loan Pronto, refinance, and get cash out of your home's equity. You can use that cash if you need it right now for something. Maybe you want to do a home improvement project. Reinvest in your home. Make it even more valuable. Or if you want to consolidate some debt, you can do either of those things. You can get $40,000, $50,000 out if you call Loan Pronto now. Take advantage of the situation now before it changes with the mortgage rates. Call 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. Or go to loanpronto.com. Their all-digital platform makes it fast and easy. And if you act now, you can skip your next two house payments for a refi, or you can get that cash out to consolidate debt, get rid of PMI, or use it to make your home even more valuable with that home improvement project you've been dreaming about. 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com, equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781, subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.
Hey, goodbye. Hey, don't forget, NFL fans, don't miss our pregame show from Rock Bottom Brewery in downtown Nashville this Sunday. Yeah, we know. The Titans are hosting the Cardinals. And you've got an opportunity from 9:30 until 11:30 a.m. at Rock Bottom Brewery on Broadway, prior to the Titans taking on the Cardinals, to hang out, have some fun before you head over to Nissan Stadium. Listen to the pregame show, Jared and Mark, and forever Titan Chris Sanders. NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey.
I love that.
Haven't had that.
Oh, really?
No.
That I have not.
You need to try it, my friend.
Haven't had that.
I highly recommend it.
Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued.
It's good.
You have me attention. You have my attention. Or me attention.
Whichever.
Oh, me, oh, my.
Sounds so good. Turn Darren into a caveman.
You had me at peanut butter and whiskey. And screwball, you know. That's all good. So check that out on Sunday as we get a little bit closer. NFL season will begin Thursday night with the Bucks and the Cowboys. The NCAA football schedule, there's not really a great...
Not as juicy as last week.
Yeah, I don't think week two is going to present the juicy matchups, as you said. So I know Mitch touched on it. Did he say Thibodeau is going to play? I didn't... The big for Oregon, their big stud.
I think
on
he said
defense.
He's expected.
Expected,
to play.
Yeah.
He
was in a boot.
Word.
Okay. They don't have Thibodeau. I don't think they got a chance. Don't think they have a chance. But I'm trying to think of what is the marquee game. I mean, that's got two ranked teams. But does anybody? It's in Columbus. If it was in Eugene, that would feel differently, right? But give me another game that is in that same category.
Washington and Michigan could have been fun.
Washington could have been if they didn't lose to an FCS school.
I mean, I know this isn't considered marquee, but I feel like Stanford-USC is always interesting, even when neither team is good.
What happened to David Shaw? Remember when he was the hot ticket, the hot name for every opening? That Stanford...
But,
job's been pretty quiet for a while, hasn't it? Like all the sexiness around David Shaw.
Very
you
hard
stuff but, down enough, though.
And also, just think about it. You had two extremely special players, and Andrew Luck and then Christian McCaffrey. It's just hard to keep getting that type of player at Stanford year in and year out. You're bound to have some cycles there.
And they had some tight ends that went to the league.
Oh, they had a lot of good players. A lot of good players. It wasn't just those guys. But what I'm saying
Sundays.
Is you're going to have some good runs at Stanford, but year in, year out, to be really, really good as they were when they had those guys, Rose Bowl kind of stuff, I think that's hard to... Like, it's not like they've been awful. You know, they just become more like a Northwestern, kind of hanging in there, winning a few, you know, eke out 6-7 wins, you know, and then if they get a special player like that, then you can elevate some.
Which is why I've always said, strike... But I guess David Shaw doesn't want to go anywhere.
Stanford guy. He's a Stanford guy.
I guess he doesn't want to go anywhere. So that's fine.
Wanted to be there.
That's fine.
Iowa State could be interesting.
I was getting ready to bring that one up. That one is in the middle of the day, the ABC game, Iowa State. That's intriguing, although a lot of hype around Iowa State. And so far, they didn't look great coming out of the gates. But they got to win. But I don't know. We'll see. What, 4.5, I think, is the line I think I remember looking at. That should be a good one.
You are correct. 4.5 in Ames.
That one, you're right. It's in Ames. So that like, once again, I'd rather, I guess, I don't know. That's an intriguing one. That definitely belongs on the list. But that's kind of
really
what we're looking at. I know. That's really about Mississippi State, NC State.
Maybe. Texas, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Like, I'll check it out.
Sure.
Check
That's
it
a
out.
Saturday night game on ESPN.
Arkansas is intriguing. They actually have a lot of pretty good talent. The wide receiver core is pretty good. I think if the QB situation figured out, I think they can give Texas a run.
Texas giving up 6.5 on the road.
Yeah.
Seems about right.
Missouri at Kentucky. Let's see what we got. The 2-1-0 teams. Let's see what happens there.
You know, you've brought up my LSU love. I've been out on the LSU bandwagon.
How do you feel about that these days? Still good?
One game, but not as good as I mean, listen, I'm eating some crow on my Chip Kelly comments.
I was going to say.
I'm eating some crow on hating on Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
So, as he sits 2-0. Caroline's in studio. I'm sorry. I'm sorry we're talking about this right now. But I'm still – let's see. Let's see how it all shakes out with the Tigers. But I'm also, Darren, I'm on the Kentucky bandwagon. I picked them to finish second in the East. Mm. So I feel – I think Kentucky could be sneaky good.
Okay.
All right. I'm curious of that game with Missouri.
Kentucky's, I think, a 5-point favorite.
Yes, sir.
Here's another big one Saturday night on ESPN, in all seriousness, because it is a huge rivalry game. Usually something crazy happens in the stands because the fans are a little juiced. BYU-Utah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big one. Although Utah's had their number. I think they've won like nine or ten in a row, which is hard to believe. Remember Zach Wilson? He's number two pick in the draft. But Utah's won. They've had their way. But that's always a good one. And it's at BYU. So that's
intriguing. Yeah. But I feel like week one always comes in with a bang because we're all just thirsty for college football.
And they should, because the NFL hasn't started, and they should do it that way.
Take advantage of it. And then they dial it back. Week two's not as good because that's the NFL's weekend.
The NFL is going to reign supreme this weekend.
Even though they're not on the same day, it's just you kind of acknowledge that this is the NFL's week as they kick off their season, and then things pick back up again. I mean, that's just how it is. So,
by the way, no Thursday night game. Is that?
Yeah, they usually do that because of the NFL kickoff.
But they usually don't do the Thursday night game?
Yeah, okay.
So it'll pick up next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Nate, not using that phrase. I used it one time yesterday, and I'm not using that phrase again. He just texted in saying what I need to do about LSU, and I'm not using that phrase.
Okay.
It's been retired for the week.
Part of the art of doing sports talk show, a sports talk show 4 hours a day, every day for a long time, you got to figure out different ways to say the same thing.
Yeah.
So you don't want to pump the brakes on LSU.
No. He's not using that term.
And I'm not using
that term. He's not using that term.
Okay.
He might chill.
Go Tigers.
He might chill, but he may not pump the brakes. He might ease up.
Ease up. Tap. How about tap?
I'll engine brake. Do that.
Slow the vehicle down.
Throw it in neutral?
Yeah.
All right. That will do it for our show on this Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful day here in Music City. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.